Blog Talk Radio.
The first of the ironclads during the American Civil War. The other one was, of course, the Merrimack and the Monitor. John Ericsson was a Swedish engineer, emigrated to America, and he had a hard time selling the cheese box on a raft idea to the Union Navy and to Lincoln. But he finally persuaded them, and when they put it together, was constructed, they met the Merrimack, which was built on the hull of a Union ship which had been set afire, but it had not been totally destroyed when the American Civil War started. And, of course, it turned out to be a draw. The South, the Confederacy, had built more ironclads than the North did, but the North had the big Navy, and, of course, they were able to successfully blockade Southern ports to prevent cotton going out to Europe so they could buy military supplies to continue the Civil War here in 1861 through 1865. And there is a movie which we will play a clip from, which we have in our archives. We have about close to 1,000 movies in the Carson Verzola archives, plus I estimate about nearly 1,500 audio interviews that I have done in the United States, primarily California, Canada, Australia, New Zealand. Among the other birthdays today, one of the first pollsters is born on this day, Elmer Roper. You probably don't hear about the Roper poll these days. You hear more about Gallup. And then out here in California, we hear about Field, but there's a big scandal in the Field poll. We have repeatedly inquired of them who they ask, who decides the demographic to be queried, who pays for these polls, who, if anybody, checks. And, so we don't get that. And, of course, Field was born in New Jersey. His father was from Russia, came here about the time of the Russian Revolution. He was supposedly a cabinet maker, and Field got a scholarship to, I think, Rutgers or Princeton, and he was engaged in some fraud there, and then he came out to California after World War II. And so we're now bamboozled with when they keep saying the field poll, which nobody's asking the questions that I just posed. Who do they ask? Who chose the demographic? Who writes the questions? Who checks, if anybody? And also, who pays? Among the other birthdays today, controversial economists, and they were known as the Chicago Boys. He was the leader, Milton Friedman, who worked at the University of Chicago. At the time of the Chilean revolt of the military down there against Allende back in the early 70s, the junta, General Pinochet and his fellow generals and admirals, called upon the University of Chicago's professors to come down and straighten out their economy, and was known as the Chicago Boys. Great writer in Italy about the time of World War II, Mussolini, Primo Levi, part of the Jewish heritage of Italy. The Secretary of Education during the Reagan administration, he also, I think, has a law degree. And he also has a brother who may have worked for, I think, the Washington Redskins. William Bennett, his birthday today. And then, if you remember her, she's the daughter of Ona O'Neill and Charlie Chaplin. Geraldine Chaplin was born on this day. And if you remember her in the movie Dr. Zhivago. Among the deaths today, most interesting is that of St. Ignatius of Loyola. He was a 1556. He was a Spanish warrior who was wounded, and he got Jesus, in effect, and started the Jesuits. And they're known as the shock troops of the Roman Catholic Church. In fact, the new pope, Pope Francis, was actually ordained as a Jesuit, but now some of the media has referred to him as a Jesuit who is acting like a Franciscan. And we'll have an interview we just did with Patrick Butler, Chicago, Illinois' primary premier political journalist. I've known him for many years, and he had some very interesting observations on the Pope who came to Chicago. That was John Paul, who was Polish. And now this new Pope, Pope Francis, who hasn't come to Chicago yet. He may yet. On this day also, talk about the American Civil War. In 1875, Andrew Johnson, Lincoln's vice president who succeeded Lincoln and who was nearly impeached. He's also a U.S. senator. He was also from Tennessee. There's a great movie called Tennessee Johnson starring Van Johnson, or Van Heflin, excuse me. It came out about the time, early part of World War II. A great film if you can find it. We may have a copy in our archives. And Andrew Johnson tried to further Abraham Lincoln's forgiveness agenda toward the South, reconciliation, and he was opposed by the radical Republicans. The most recent movie on Lincoln, starring Daniel Day-Lewis, a very interesting aspect you haven't seen in other Lincoln movies. Andrew Johnson is not much shown on him. It's more on Lincoln. But he's a fascinating character. He kept Tennessee by force in the Union, and also was chosen. Lincoln's first vice president was a guy named Schuyler Chapin. And Lincoln dumped him in 1864 and chose Andrew Johnson. Lincoln was a very interesting personality. He was a very shrewd lawyer, and a lot of people don't know this, and it hasn't been really explored by many historians. Lincoln was quite an operator. He worked for the Illinois Central Railroad, which in those days was a license to steal for the railroads, and he got the capital of Illinois changed from Galena to Springfield. Fascinating. And then, of course, his relationship with the McCormicks of the Chicago Tribune, who really put him over the top at the convention in Chicago, Republican convention, selected him as their nominee for president. Among the other deaths today, another Republican, Robert Taft, who was known as Mr. Republican. He was the founding father of the Taft dynasty in Ohio, and he was very conservative. He was often thought of as a presidential candidate, but never made it. One of his sons became governor of Ohio. Another one was lawyer for the Bush administration, handled military affairs. William Taft III, I thought. Robert Taft lived, he opposed General Eisenhower. He thought he was too liberal. But Robert Taft only lived to about 63, didn't live that long. And then also is a notorious death of execution of a Spanish priest who tried to help liberate Mexico. Miguel Hidalgo y Castillo was executed by the Spanish, who still occupied Mexico during the time of just before the American Civil War and before Benito Juarez, who was the guy who finally helped kick the Spanish out of Mexico. And, of course, at the same time, we had Simon Bolivar, who rousted the Spanish from South America. And the only European colony was Portugal. Not Portugal, Brazil, excuse me. Among the events today, Marquis de Lafayette, who was 18 years old, had this illustrious French aristocracy background. In 1777, he came to the United States, and Washington was so impressed with him, appointed him a major general in the Continental Army. And in 1925, England established unemployment insurance for their people. They were heading into a depression. And, of course, one of the English former soldiers who fought in World War I was at the Battle of the Somme and Gallipoli was Trevor Hodges, who did one interview, which we have the exclusive rights to, and which we did. And he told me in the interview, and in fact we'll play it again, that after World War I, the British were so bled economically by the war that a lot of Englishmen who could emigrated to the United States. And he became a vice president, I think, of Chrysler is what he told me. And then 1940, FDR knew that the United States sooner or later would be drawn into the European War. We were not fighting Japan at that time until 1941, after December 7th. Anyway, he told me that there were 10,000 former British military officers here in the United States before World War II, and the War Department, which later became the Defense Department, the War Department put out the call to these guys to come and train the what was to be the new U.S. Army. And he was one of them. He later became a colonel, and they gave him Women's Army Corps division up here in Northern California, and some interesting things happened in the camp that he was the commandant of. Among the events today, or among the topics today, if he had run in Chicago and had to deal with Mayor Daley, who was the chairman of the Cook County Democratic machine and party, would Wiener's candidacy go down in Chicago politics, given the sex scandals, the repeated sex scandals? What would Mayor Daley have done? And Butler thinks, and I think, since I'm familiar with Chicago politics, that Daley would have squashed crushed Wiener's ambitions and aspirations and told him, you're a liability to the party, and the party is not going to back you. Now, also, Pope Francis, as I earlier mentioned, was a Jesuit. He's from Argentina. His family was Italian, and they emigrated to Argentina. Argentina is the one of the few countries in South America which didn't have black slaves from Africa. The ethnics that emigrated to Argentina, besides the Spanish, were Italians, French, some British, and I think some other European countries. It's just like Chile. There were no, as far as we can tell, no black African slavery was there. But we have Spanish, French, Slavic and they're very big in the wine industry. But Pope Francis has said he wants the Vatican Bank to become transparent. We've got to be careful of that word. And he's trying to shape up the Vatican. But I mentioned today in an interview which we'll run that the Vatican is like is akin to the U.S. State Department during the time of FDR. He said, FDR said that whenever he tried to get anything done over at the State Department, it was like punching a mattress. You know, it just sprung back at you. But anyway, I would recommend Jack Cashel, one of America's great unsung authors, or little sung authors. He writes a book a year. He's very articulate, very literate. He did an excellent book called Popes and Bankers. If you want to understand the Catholic Church, money and the bankers that are connected to it in the Vatican Bank and, of course, the history of banking, get Jack Cashel's book, Popes and Bankers. It's also on Amazon.com. Also, a book that I had authored and withdrawn, When Government Grants, Easy Pickings, When Government Grants Greed and Graft Embrace, we are seeing and we're going to expose employees that were not only working for a local government, but were setting up these bogus 501c3s to get government grants, and they were collecting two and sometimes three salaries plus rehab grants for property, which they never rehabbed the property, but we don't know what they did with the money. Also, I still can't find it, and we'll try to play it Friday, Mel Belli's interview. It was his birthday this week. And it's very interesting. I had a long relationship with Mel Belli after I came back from Australia in the mid-80s. And, of course, I mentioned that to Mel, I used to date a woman in his law office and I went to Thanksgiving at his house and on his boat for Christmas. And he gave me some interesting interviews, and among them was one which is very relevant, the airline crashes. The downing of KAL, the Korean airline jet 007, which an American congressman, Larry McDonald, was on, and I think 65 or so other Americans, and the Russian shot this plane down, claiming that it had strayed into Soviet airspace, which it may have, and also nobody survived, which some people are raising a lot of questions about that, even here nearly 30 years later. Anyway, Mel Belli, the heirs of some of the people who went down in that plane, whether they were alive or not, went to Mel Belli and asked him to get compensation from the Russians, from the Soviets, and he gave them a demand. They ignored it, as they usually did in that period of time. So what Mel did was he went into court and got a order to seize any Russian purchases, any Soviet purchases of machinery and all that here in the United States, and he gave the order to the marshals. So when the goods arrived on the docks to be transported to Russia, the marshal seized them, and they wouldn't release them until the Russian government, the Soviets, paid up. And that's how Mel Belli got the money for his clients, those who he represented, who were the heirs of those people who were shot down in 007. So that story. It's not well known, but it's one that he shared with me. And also, we were animal lovers, and he had the little Italian greyhounds and did an interesting interview with him on dog bite liability, one of the couple of cases that I worked on there as a legal investigator and researcher. Now, among the projects we are working on is a public policy question, which will be a new feature. And the issue, I think is very relevant, is this. When black public officials like Jesse Jackson, Amos Brown, Willie Brown, when these people, and there are others, who are involved in sexual misconduct, graft, and corruption, are these blacks held to a different or no standard than white people who do the same thing? I mean, if a Wiener was black, if Spitzer was black, would the media and other public corruption exposers, would they have been on Wiener's case or Spitzer's case, even that guy from North Carolina, former governor of Sanford, I think his name. So this is a serious question because all these people, Jesse Jackson fathered an illegitimate child. He was married to one woman. He's supposed to be a minister. Reverend Amos Brown has $250,000 in pedophile judgments against him. Those involve primarily little girls, but there are questions about the Ethiopian Boy Project. Were they molested, and there were signs around San Francisco, Amos sucks the babes. And, of course, $250,000 in judgments, which he had to, him and his church had to pay up. Also, he owned a house in a district where he decided he was going to run for public office. He didn't live there, but he owned the house, and he rented it to a woman who was in a wheelchair. He evicted the woman so he could move in, or so-called, and claim that this was his residence so he could run from that district, but he got exposed on that. And this guy is supposed to have been a man of God. Now, this is the kind of thing that goes on. Then we have Willie Brown, who was accused by even the left, the liberal press, of being one of the most corrupt politicians ever to be in California. Willie Brown ran the legislature like Huey Long ran the legislature down in Louisiana. And Willie Brown's critics refer to him as the Black Kingfish. Willie Brown is married to a woman who lives in New York, reportedly gets $1 million a year to stay away. They're not divorced. Willie Brown fathered a child with a woman, a white woman, who was married to another guy, still married at that time, Carpinetti. And reportedly the child is referred to as his, or he refers to it as his white rabbit. Now, if that isn't racist, and if it's true, he should be called on it. If a white person did this, a white politician or public official, they'd be all over him, and cries of racism would we'd hear him from one end of the country to the other. So that's a serious question. So we're going to end today. Unfortunately, what I'm going to do is run Patrick's interview Friday, and we'll end with our usual politics and poker. None of these guys play poker. If they did, they'd be losers.
What do you say, Ben? Want a hand?
No, you guys go ahead. I got too much on my mind to play poker.
King bets.
Cost you five. Tony, up to you.
Hey, Tony, what are you going to do?
I'm in.
So am I.
Likewise.
Me too.
Hit me with a king.
Ready?
Gentlemen. Here we are, and one thing is clear. We gotta pick a candidate for Congress this year.
Big ace.
Ace bets.
You'll pay through the nose.
Okay, where do you stand?
I'm in.
So am I.
Likewise.
Here goes.
Possible straight, possible flush. Nothing.
Gentlemen, how about some names we can use? Some qualified Republican who's willing to lose.
How's it going? We should make Jack Riley the guy.
Which Riley are you thinking of, Jack B or Jack Y?
I say neither one. I never even met him.
I say when you got a pair of Jack, bat out.
Politics and poker, shuffle up the cards and find the joker. Neither game's for children, neither game is rough. Decisions like
who to pick,
how to play, not to bet,
when to call a bluff.
All right now, fellas, politics or poker, which is more important?
Paratrays.
Bet 'em.
Little trays, good as gold.
I'll say.
Raise your five.
I'll call.
I'll hold.
I'll raise your back.
I think you're bluffing.
Put your money where your mouth is.
Okay, I'm in.
Gentlemen, knock it off and let's get this done.
Try Michael Fajicinkovich. I'm certain he'd run.
Mike is out. I'm afraid he just wouldn't sell. Nobody likes a candidate whose name they can't spell.
How about Dave Zimmerman?
Dave, he's too bright.
What about Walt Gustafson?
Walt died last night.
How about Frank Monahan?
What about George Gale?
Frank ain't a citizen, and George is in jail.
We could run out Wallenstein.
He's only 23.
What about Ed Peterson?
You idiot! That's me!
Politics and poker! Politics and poker! Playing for a pot that's mediocre! Politics and poker! Rubbing neck and neck! If politics seems more predictable, that's because usually you can stack the deck! Politics and poker! Politics and poker! Makes the average guy a heavy smoker! Bet on the knee and give him a regard! And watch while he learns that in poker and politics, brother, you gotta have that slippery, haphazardous commodity! You gotta have the card!
We'll be back Friday. We'll be back Friday at 4 p.m. and hopefully we'll have those interviews. It's Peter Paul Rizzola. Go to our Amicus Veritas YouTube site, AmiCusVeritas. So join us Friday at 4 p.m. Pacific Standard Time. Good night.